This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. When looking at 20th century history in Detroit, there's been a lot written about cars and labor, chiefly about men who were hired. There's been a lot less written about women and even less about African-American women in Detroit. My next guest is correcting some of that. Victoria Walcott is the author of Making Respectability, African-American Women in Interwar Detroit. And we're going to be talking about the Detroit Housewives League. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So what was this Detroit Housewives League?
So the Detroit Housewives League began in 1930, and it was an attempt by African-American women to essentially try to expand the job market for all African-Americans in Detroit by boosting the businesses, black-owned businesses, and pressuring white-owned businesses to hire African-American workers. So this begins in 1930, so it's as the Great Depression is beginning to have an enormous impact on the city, and this kind of economic nationalism was a response to that.
I want to get into their tactics, how they manage some of this, but I want to get into whose idea was this? How did this come up?
Right. So there was a talk given at the Bethel AME Church, which was a man was invited by William Peck, who was the minister at the church at the time, talking about the importance of African-American businesses. And he mentioned that there was a group of housewives in Harlem who had already organized a similar kind of effort there. So Fanny Peck, who was the wife of William Peck, heard this talk and decided that she would start her own version of the Harlem Housewives League here in Detroit. And African-American women in the city of Detroit had, you know, are very well organized, had done a lot of activism, you know, during this period of the Great Migration. So she was able to mobilize really thousands of people around this effort and relatively quickly.
Despite the name Detroit Housewives League, we're not talking about ladies auxiliary or something like that.
Right. I mean, these are women, many of them were employed. Many of them would have been employed actually in domestic service and the sort of service sector that African-American women were largely relegated to. You had a lot of working-class women who were involved in this organization, as well as middle-class women like Fanny Peck, who had been, you know, active certainly in the church and in women's clubs. So it was a really kind of crossed class lines, which I think is one of the important reasons for its success. So these are very mobilized political women, quite savvy about trying to create a better economic environment during the Great Depression.
So tell me about their actions. What did they do that put pressure on businesses?
So they did a variety of things. They, for example, helped to have African-American businesses advertise. They gave prizes for the best-run black businesses and publicized those prizes. They would actually do tours of black businesses, so they would have newspaper reporters, for example, do these tours and then write articles promoting these businesses. They also put pressure on white-owned businesses to hire African-Americans. So they would investigate white-owned businesses, and if there were no black workers, particularly if they were on the east side where the large black community was, they would promote boycotts of those businesses and therefore putting pressure on white business owners. They also very pragmatically ran a training school at the local YMCA so that young people could be trained to take the kinds of jobs that were being developed in terms of things like entrepreneurship, how do you run a business, how do you work in a store, so that they'd be prepared for jobs as they began to open up. So there's a whole variety of tactics that they used that were really quite effective.
They also, as I understand it, were steering black clients or patrons of certain retail establishments away from those establishments and saying, hey, look, why would you shop at a white store when there are black merchants who need support as well? And by the mid-1950s, Detroit had more black-owned businesses than any other city in the nation. How else did the Detroit Housewives League help make that happen?
Well, I mean, I think you point to a really important tactic, which is the boycott. And although we associate the boycott, obviously, with a Montgomery bus boycott, you sort of think about that with Martin Luther King in 1955, in fact, there's this very long history of African-American women engaging in consumer boycotts that goes back to the late 19th century with the establishment of segregation. So there were streetcar boycotts and other kinds of boycotts. So these women would have known that tactic, had maybe engaged in that tactic in previous kinds of movements, and took it to Detroit. So that becomes really important. And in fact, by 1955, as you mentioned, there's more African-American-owned businesses in Detroit than any other city, and the Detroit Housewives League becomes sort of the premier Housewives League of what eventually becomes a national organization. So they host a lot of the national conferences there, and they're really held up as a model for, around cities around the country who are trying to imitate their success.
How many women were involved in this at its peak?
At its peak, from my research, it's about 12,000 women. This would be sort of late 30s into the World War II era in the 1940s. So there were thousands and thousands of people who were engaged. It didn't cost anything. All you had to do was to sign a pledge promising that you would shop in black-owned businesses and black products. And that was your entrance into the organization. And it was organized on the neighborhood level. So each neighborhood had a lot of autonomy in terms of the, trying to address the problems in their particular communities.
Now, in the 1960s, urban renewal caused an end to places such as Black Bottom, where so many African-American businesses were located. Buildings were demolished. People were moved out. Where was the Detroit Housewives League at that point?
So from what I understand, it began to diminish somewhat in terms of its membership and its activism, really starting in the 60s. It's still quite active in the 1950s, and I think one of the issues here is just the structural destruction of urban renewal in particular, the removal of the tax base with white flight that's happening. This is even all before the riot and so forth. Those are odds that are very difficult to fight against in a way that they could fight with the Great Depression by boosting businesses. You know, the bulldozer was much harder to fight against. So that's one issue. I do think that, and it continues into the 70s and 80s, and I believe the final meetings were in the 1990s. But also, you know, the term Housewives League might have sounded at that point quite old-fashioned, perhaps, to some African-American women who could engage in other kinds of movements that were happening in the city, obviously the Black Power movement, union movement. So they had other options in terms of their activism. So this may have seemed as something that was more in the past to them by that point.
Why do you think the role of black women in Detroit has been overlooked by historians?
It's primarily because of the dominance of the factories, the dominance of the industrial economy. So the story of Detroit has always been the male industrial worker, whether that's a white man from Appalachia migrating into the city, or an Eastern European immigrant, or an African-American man who migrates to the city during the Great Migration and works in Ford. Or other plants. And so that's always been the sort of narrative of the city, are, you know, what's happening to these men, what happens with the unionization and the CIO, and then what happens as the automobile factories decline and you have deindustrialization. So African-American women didn't really seem to fit into that narrative and were really largely invisible until, you know, my book and some other work has been done more recently.
We've been talking to Victoria Walcott about the Detroit Housewives League. She's a professor of history with the University at Buffalo and the author of Remaking Respectability, African-American Women in Interwar Detroit. Thanks very much for telling us about this.
No problem. I enjoyed it.